Welcome back. It's the World Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online, and apps. In episode 132, we discuss how much of an impact the Women's World Cup on Fox had on MLS and NWSL TV ratings. Man City launches their own OTT streaming service. NBC delivers another hammer blow to fans of Premier League clubs, plus letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined by my co-host, Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, we're in the dog days of summer. It's hot as hell out there. There is quite a lot of soccer on television. I know you've been busy with Miami FC and their run in the MPSL, and I've been busy because I'm getting ready to move. I'm going to be moving to Jacksonville, which is in North Florida, so I've been packing like crazy. So I haven't watched as many games as I normally do. How about you? What's your soccer watching been like?
I tried to watch, I DVR'd the Portland-Orlando game on NWSL match on ESPN News. It was running concurrent with the Himmershey FC match, a club here in South Florida that I'm the vice president of and a co-owner of, that we were playing in the Super Cup. We had won the league postseason, the cup competition, if you will, in our league, and the team that we played had won the regular season, had won the points title, so we had a Super Cup. We won that match, but was running along the same side as the Portland-Orlando game. And the mistake I made is I get alerts for the Pride anyway on my phone. I had not turned my alerts off, so it was ding, ding, ding every 2 minutes because it was a 4-3 match, particularly in the second half. So I went back and watched that on ESPN News on the DVR, but fast-forwarded through everything because I knew when the goals were coming. And then I realized I've deleted it. I saw Portland 1-4-3 and realized I probably should have watched more carefully for ESPN's coverage of NWSL, this being their first match that they're showing on ESPN News after the Women's World Cup. So the next time they show an match, which is in the next few weeks, which is this week, I believe, I will pay more close attention to the actual coverage of it.
There's an art in fast-forwarding soccer games. I mean, probably some of the listeners can attest to this in terms of, you mean how fast to do. I mean, if you don't know what the actual score is or who scored, and you're short on time and you need to fast forward a little bit just to get through the game, and try to fast forward where you're fast forward in the action, but you mean if it gets close to the goal, maybe you slow it down a little bit, or maybe you pause it and press play again. I remember, I mean, many years ago, I had my cousin over from Wales, and we were watching, I think it was a Spurs game. We had to go because we had an appointment to go to or something, and we were fast forwarding like crazy just to try to get through the game, and I kept on missing goals. I had no idea that Spurs like goals, 3 goals, 4 goals, 5 goals, so we missed them all because I kept on fast forwarding and then had to rewind it, which takes away the whole experience and the emotion and the excitement, kind of killed it for us. But I'm sure there's some connoisseurs out there, some of the listeners who are skilled at the fast forwarding to not screw it up.
Yeah, with the MyCujo platform, we've made it almost too easy. And we were talking this up during the last Miami FC broadcast against Chattanooga. There are bookmarks on the thing on MyCujo, which is, of course, a soccer platform or football platform exclusively, that you could actually just scroll to the – if you're watching on a computer, if you're watching on a TV, then fast forward to a bookmark on the bottom, which tells you where the goal was, where the card was, what incidents in the match.
Technology.
Which is something I bet ESPN Plus will do eventually, I'm guessing.
Maybe. That's a great feature, though. That's something that I think most of us can use. I mean, some of us probably would want the element of surprise where we're not sure when those things are going to happen. But I think for most of us, that'd be a great feature for a lot of these streaming platforms. So in terms of games I saw, there's only two I saw this past week, and that was Algeria against Nigeria in the semi-final of the Africa Cup of Nations. Just a great match, kind of back and forth, end-to-end, goals. I think it was Nigeria went ahead first, and Algeria came back. And with the very last kick of the game, I think it was even in injury time, Riyad Mahrez for Algeria had an opportunity from a free kick outside the box, and he takes it and just scores a beautiful goal right in the corner, and Algeria and the fans and the players go absolutely nuts. And now they move through to the final against Senegal. So far, and actually that one was a better pitch that they played on. More people in the stadium. So in the earlier rounds of the Africa Cup of Nations, it has been pretty lackluster in terms of the atmosphere. But this semi-final was fantastic, and I'm looking forward to watching the Algeria-Senegal final, which should be a good one. Which is live on beIN Sports, by the way. And then also caught Yeovil Town, who are now in the non-league, against Swansea City, a friendly this midweek, and watched that for free from the Swansea City website, and thoroughly enjoyed that one. Getting excited for the new season, which will be here in just a couple of weeks. All right, Kartik. So that's it for our TV watching, but let's move on to TV streaming news. And actually, there's quite a bit of news this week.
Yeah, so the first piece of news I think was met with a lot of fanfare, which was Man City for TV launches, and it's going to be this very, very, as reported by World Soccer Talk, affordable monthly on-demand service that gives Man City fans or whoever subscribes, right, for a £1.99 a month. All kinds of on-demand, all sorts of extra features, all sorts of ancillary things around the club, which is taking advantage, I think, one of Manchester City's marketing prowess, but also, Chris, the fantastic amount of video, richness of video that they provide. And this will be a service that's available on all your kind of Roku, Fire Stick, Apple TV-type devices.
Yeah, it's a smart move because Manchester City, in terms of the player base, I mean, the players, it has a global appeal. I mean, you've got Brazilians, you've got, people from around the world in terms of players, you've got Belgians, and you name it. So globally, it's a great way for Manchester City to have programming. So some of it's going to be full match replays. Obviously, it's going to be a delay. They're not going to be able to show it usually within the first 48 hours. There will be a delay. But they will be able to show the women's games live, the academy games live, and some documentaries that they're putting together, as well as other like press conferences and other programming. And the sweet thing about this too is just the, like you mentioned, the price point. You mentioned $1.99, actually £1.99, which is roughly about $2.70 a month. So if you are a Manchester City fan, it's definitely attractive. It's definitely worth checking out, and hopefully more and more clubs will do this at that price point. Because usually in the past, if there has been any kind of TV channel, club TV channel, which oftentimes is available through the website, it's pretty expensive or can be pretty expensive. And with this one, it's on Roku, Apple TV, the web, and other places. So they've made it really accessible. Very cost-effective, and have a lot of good programming. The other thing about Manchester City, too, is that they are one of the most forward-thinking social media companies, clubs, with social media programs. Like, for example, I think it would have been last summer, seeing Manchester City in the International Champions Cup in Miami. And usually there's... Whenever a club comes to town, that club will have like one person doing the social media stuff, and he's in the press room, and he's live blogging or just updating fans through the website, minute by minute commentary, etc. Manchester City must have had a team of about six or seven people. They had photographers, they had videographers, it was just a large presence, a large team. And that's something I've never seen before in a press room, to have that many people for an away game. You mean thousands of miles away from the home club. So from the digital side of things, Manchester City have been knocking it out of the park for several seasons. And this is a smart move. So we'll have to wait and see how this evolves. But it's promising. Now... less promising is the news this week that we revealed on World Soccer Talk as a follow-up to what we talked about last week, where there's been a lot of changes to NBC Sports Gold. And most soccer fans are either on vacation or in hibernation or just taking a break, basically, during the summer before the season starts. And a lot of these soccer fans of Premier League clubs are going to be in for a big surprise once the new Premier League season starts August 9th. And that is that with NBC Sports Gold, with their paid streaming service, if you want to watch a game, say it's a 7:30 kickoff in the morning on an Eastern time on a Saturday, and you want to watch Man City against Spurs, but you miss it. You're either traveling or you slept in late or whatever, and you want to go ahead and watch that on demand. Previously, you would just go to NBCSports.com or the NBC Sports app, and you would watch it on delay. Usually, within about an hour after the game has ended, you could watch it through there at no extra charge as long as you were an NBCSN subscriber. Well, that has gone completely. Now it is that all of the full match replays are only going to be available on the NBC Sports Gold streaming service, which is $65 a season. Not only that, though, but the games that are on television that are available then on streaming through the NBC Sports Gold app will not be available until 9 p.m. Eastern time on match days. So that game that you watched at 7:30, that's over at 9:30 in the morning Eastern time, you have to wait almost 12 hours before that game is available on demand. And by that point, it's pretty much meaningless at that point because you already know what the score is. You've probably seen the highlights, and that full match replay has little to no really purpose, really. So it's and then the other thing, even for the games that you subscribe to through the NBC Sports Gold app, the ones that are streaming, say the 10 o'clock Eastern games, those for the season coming up now are not going to be available on demand until 4 hours after the game has ended. So NBC is making it harder to watch the Premier League. They're putting up obstacles and restrictions and barriers to make it harder to watch, and at the same time asking for more money, a 30% increase on the price. Kartik, I've heard from several people this week and last 2 weeks that enough's enough, and they're going to start watching more of other leagues. They're going to start watching more of Serie A, watching more of the Championship, or looking for other leagues to watch because NBC is making it harder to watch the Premier League. What's your take? Do you think that this would happen, or does the Premier League have such a pull that these fans will end up watching the Premier League anyway?
I don't know, because I think that American fans in particular have, I've been pretty outspoken on this. It bothers me how kind of myopic they are about the Premier League versus other leagues. A lot of Premier League fans in the U.S. that they just look down upon other leagues. They don't really want to consider other leagues. If a Premier League team wins in Europe, it's because the Premier League's better. If a Premier League team loses in Europe, it's because they're in a more competitive league and have to play a tougher game at the weekend, and the Bundesliga team or Serie A team did not. So I don't know. I've even if people say, hey, we're not happy with what NBC's doing, I just have this feeling that they're so drawn to that league and to the propaganda that league has put out for years, which gets routinely mocked on shows like the Guardian podcast, but is out there and has been particularly effective in the United States, plus NBC's superior coverage of that league for the first 6 years of their two rights cycles, that they may say that, they may huff and puff, but they may not actually do that. I think the attachment to the Premier League is probably too great. But it'd be great to see some more diversity in thought and in football viewing for a lot of fans in the U.S. I would welcome if they watch more of the Championship, or if they watch more of Serie A or Bundesliga or La Liga or whatever league it is, or even Major League Soccer, which is much more accessible via ESPN Plus than it was in the MLS Live days. So let's see.
Yeah, and one more thing about this too is the pro tip on this one is that if you do subscribe to NBCSN through your cable or satellite company or through a third party streaming platform like Sling TV or Fubo TV, is that for those games that are on television for the Premier League, is DVR them. Record them, and even if you're not sure whether or not you're going to be able to watch it, or you think you're going to be able to watch it, DVR it, because that way, that's the only way that you can guarantee that if you do miss a match, you can actually watch it a little bit later, rather than having to wait until 9 o'clock Eastern time, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Let me ask you this, Chris, before we move on: do you think NBC is trying to force more money where they can recoup some of the rights fee for this package by doing these sorts of things, or is this just a natural evolution in what we would see in terms of giving price point and on-demand type programming? Because I'm quite honestly, I've been confused by these moves the last few weeks.
I think it's a little bit of both, because I'm sure there's bean counters within NBCSN, or bean counters, or maybe that there's people in charge of the digital side of things in terms of the streaming platforms. And then there's other executives that are kind of just focused on the revenue that they're generating and looking at how much they're spending, which is almost $1 billion for the rights to this over a period of 6 years. So it's a combination of that. I think it's probably some pressure. There's definitely pressure on them to figure out, are there different ways that we can increase the revenue to try to break even with the money that they're spending on the Premier League? They're probably losing money in terms of the advertising coming in and any dollars coming in from streaming, etc., as well as subscription fees from the TV distributors too. So I think it's a combination. So it's one thing that they're focused on trying to break even, which there's nothing wrong with that. And at the same time, the digital side of things, I don't think they completely understand the mindset of soccer fans and what their needs are and how they actually consume the league and their favorite club and everything that they go through. So I think it's one of those things where they think, okay, this is no big deal. I mean, we can make the games available at 9 o'clock Eastern. They still have access to it. And they can wait a little bit longer and watch the game overnight, whatever, which completely flies in the window of reality of, I mean, most soccer fans who are diehard fans of a Premier League club are going to look at this and go, this is absolutely ridiculous. This is not easy. This is not a benefit to me, the consumer. This is actually, if anything, making it harder for me to figure out, I mean, which service to subscribe to. It's more confusing, and which is a good fit for me. And I'm sure, too, with NBCSN, they're probably like, hey, Comcast acquired Sky Sports. They've got all this great content. Let's go ahead and take a lot of this content and add it to the NBC Sports Gold, and they're making this into a bigger product, and let's charge 30% more. People are going to love it. So I think it's a little bit of that. They just don't understand what the soccer fans are looking for and what they're wanting, and at the same time, they're trying to figure out ways to make money. And it's not easy. I'm sure within NBC there's a lot of pressure to generate more revenue, because the viewership has increased slightly. I think it's about 457,000 on average viewers for a Premier League match from last season, which was an increase from about 444,000 the season before. So it's inching up. It's not breaking into the millions, where the average viewership is over a million, and now, you mean, more money is coming in from advertisers and sponsors. So I guess it's where things are at. And I guess at the end of the day, Kartik, we've been spoiled, because when NBCSN launched the Premier League coverage in 2013, every single game was accessible for free through the NBC Sports Live Extra app. And it was great. I mean, and I think in many ways now we're in the reality of the escalating fees for these rights, which is astronomical, the amount of money that companies are paying for rights in general. And it's just really hard to, I guess, when the rubber meets the road, and it's really hard to actually, you mean, make the money to try to make it a profitable exercise in terms of what they're doing. It's very, very difficult, and at the end of the day, the consumers get the heave ho and are asked to pay more money. So I think there is better ways to do this. I think there are ways to actually be smarter about this, and I go into a lot more detail on the website on worldsoccertalk.com. On the homepage, there's an article that talks about how NBC Sports Gold could be the Netflix of Premier League viewing, and some of the things it could do to make this more of a viable product that actually wouldn't generate more money for them and would satisfy the cord cutters and keep the TV viewers happy too at the same time. So check that out if you want some more insight and some great comments from the listeners and readers on there too, having some debates about it. Right, Kartik, speaking of the Premier League, some news in regards to viewing audiences.
Yeah, so the Premier League reached a global audience of 3.2 billion during the 2018-19 season, that's last season, a 6% increase on the previous campaign, boosted by a new free-to-air coverage, by new free-to-air coverage in countries including Brazil and South Africa. So that always helps. That is something, of course, that you still do not have, and probably will never have in the United Kingdom itself, is free-to-air coverage of the Premier League.
Yeah, although with the Cricket World Cup, there's definitely been a lot of pressure on, a lot of it's on the politicians, and people asking the politicians, actually reporters like Dan Roan asked some of the politicians, like, you mean, what can be done to try to get free-to-air access for a lot of these games? And but then at the end of the day, you know, I mean, again, it comes back to money, it comes back to revenue. If the Premier League can generate more money in rights fees from Sky Sports, why should it go to a free-to-air BBC or ITV and for less money? And yes, it helps accessibility in terms of making the league more available to more TV viewers nationwide, but that does not help in the UK. But the UK is very different, though, too, especially with a lot of those. I mean, all the games being played within that country. So two more quick items before we move on to TV ratings. Let me just run through these. This Saturday, July 20th, is going to mark the launch of a brand new sports soccer channel. It's one that you're very familiar with, which is the Univision Deportes Network. It's going to be renamed to Tudn, and so it's TUDN, and it's launching this Saturday. So it's they're going to start with the new logo, the new name. But all the games that you're used to watching on Univision Deportes Network, such as Liga MX, which begins the new season begins this weekend, begins Friday. On Saturday, the channel will be Tudn. All right, and then last but not least, Turner Sports has announced that Kevin Egan will call TNT's broadcasts of Liverpool's preseason games in the US with Charlie Davis as the co-commentator, and. This could be a big hint, Kartik. I know that Kevin Egan, we reported this on World Soccer Talk. He moved from beIN Sports to Atlanta, and this could be a good opportunity for him to showcase what his talent and what he can do, which could potentially lead to maybe a longer-term contract with TNT and get more involved there. We've seen him. He can do the presenter role. He can do commentating. He can be an analyst. He can be a sideline reporter. So there's certainly a few ways that Turner could utilize his great skills if they want to.
Yeah, I think he's one of the best in the business, and this is a great opportunity for him. Borussia Dortmund, Liverpool is Friday this week, so first opportunity for him, and then I believe there's a match the following Saturday against Sporting, correct, on TNT?
I think so, yeah. Yeah, I think the only one that's not televised is the game against Sevilla, the friendly, and that one is on BR Live. So, so Liverpool fans, definitely check that out, and fans in general. If you're not familiar with Kevin Egan, this is a good opportunity. And then that TV ratings, Kartik, we don't have a lot to go through, but these three are very important ones because, I mean, the Women's World Cup is over. I mean, we enjoyed it thoroughly, of course, and we all know who won. But what impact did that have on the viewership? So, massive tournament on Fox, on FS1, etc., and going into the first week of programming after that, was there a sizable bump in the number of viewers? Well, the three games we have to look at in terms of answering that question, one was Seattle against Atlanta on ESPN on Sunday. And those two teams, I don't think there's any question about it, are the two most popular teams in the United States for Major League Soccer. These are teams that are attractive to watch, have fantastic fan bases. And this game was on ESPN, which is the flagship network, and definitely on a Sunday during prime time is great visibility there. That one had 452,000 viewers, which is fantastic. A fantastic number for Major League Soccer and for Seattle and Atlanta. Then you have FS1, who, even before the Women's World Cup started, we've been talking about how the viewership on that network for Major League Soccer games has been slipping downwards, has been... For whatever reason, whether it's the talent, whether it's the timing, whether it's the coverage, whatever it is, the viewership for FS1 games for MLS have been poor. And here we have another familiar story, Kartik, We have a New York Derby. You mean the Red Bulls against NYCFC on a Sunday, which Major League Soccer headquarters must be thinking, okay, great, this is one of the biggest TV markets in the country, New York, and let's blow this out of the water. Let's have some big numbers here. 156,000 viewers. And for you and me, Kartik, that's no surprise, just in terms of just how poor, how lack of, you know, lack of relevancy there has been about the New York teams nationally. Very people seem to care about those two teams. And then last but not least, I want to get your take on this, Kartik. Portland Thorns against Orlando Pride. You mean record-breaking numbers on Spanish-language television for the Women's World Cup final. Approximately about 14 million for the game itself. And then we have the first really big featured NWSL game, Portland Thorns against Orlando Pride, on ESPN News on Sunday, and that one had 77,000 viewers. So, Kartik, how do you read that one?
Yeah, that's with not that much promotion, but at the same time coming off the Women's World Cup, I was hoping the number would be a little higher. Like I said, that's the only match I paid any attention to that was on television this past week. However, that was a match without Lindsey Horan, Tobin Heath, Alex Morgan, Allie Krieger. So you did not have the U.S. bump. You did have Christy Sinclair making her return from the Canadian national team for Portland, and Marta making her return from the Brazilian national team to Orlando. So you still had some big Women's World Cup names, maybe two of the bigger non-U.S. names in that Women's World Cup. However, you did not have any of the U.S. players. So we will have to hold out for another week or two to see if there has been a massive bump for NWSL, which is quite frankly what what most of us in the game in this country are hoping for, is because NWSL is a little bit on shaky ground, as Grant Wall and others have reported in the last week or two. As far as the ratings for the two MLS games, Chris, I mean, this once again, I don't know, I've been going on about this for 7 or 8 years and been pushed back upon by people who are close to MLS HQ, that you're much better off showing Seattle, Portland, Atlanta, well, now Atlanta, in those days Seattle, Portland, Atlanta, Orlando, when Nashville comes to the league next year. I think when they announce the Charlotte team, which my sources tell me will happen in the next 6 months, a team in Charlotte, that'll be another big one. Tom Glick, who formerly ran Derby County and Manchester City, or he was the COO at Manchester City, could be the person to run that club. That those clubs draw better ratings than and have more fan interest and casual fan interest than the New York teams or the team in Chicago or the team in Philly or, quite honestly, the LA Galaxy at this point. LAFC has done a lot of things right. And with Bob Bradley, they're the best footballing squad that we've seen in MLS, I think, in some time. However, they still, I don't think, have the kind of cachet in terms of moving the needle that Atlanta and Seattle do. So big markets versus not as big markets. Atlanta and Seattle are two fairly large markets, but they're not top five, top six markets in the country. There's a difference in how MLS is perceived, and that's not changing. And it seems like that's actually becoming more pronounced now than it was 5, 6, 7 years ago when I used to argue with people about this, when I began arguing with people about this premise that if you want to keep your television ratings up, you show Seattle as much as possible, not the New York and LA teams.
Yeah, one of the things that's difficult too for LAFC, and I've enjoyed watching them this season. I haven't watched them as much as some other fans have, but when I have tuned in, it's been attacking-minded, attractive football, exciting football to watch. The challenge is that with the time zone, though, so if you want to get a really big crowd watching, a big TV audience watching, say, LAFC against Atlanta United or something like that, and the game is being played in California, and you're probably not going to get a 7 o'clock or 7:30 Eastern Time kickoff. It's probably going to be like the game Friday, which is the LA Galaxy LAFC game, which I think is going to start at, I think, 10:30 or 11 o'clock at night Eastern Time. So you're cutting out the East Coast audience that are probably, most of them are probably not going to stay up that late to watch a game that's going to be over around about midnight or 1 o'clock in the morning Eastern time. But it's unfortunately the same old story with Major League Soccer in terms of and this partly goes back to Fox, but it's probably more of an MLS thing, is that they're not able to go ahead and transfer that audience from the Women's World Cup and all of the excitement and all of the promos and plugs and even talking about Major League Soccer and the ads and stuff like that. I mean, the week after, the viewing numbers are the same. It's no difference there. And it's a similar challenge to NWSL too. NWSL was the opposite. There was very little to no promotion of NWSL during the Women's World Cup, other than if it'd be one of the analysts talking about it or mentioning. You mean whether it's Heather O'Reilly or somebody else talking about NWSL? I played against her, et cetera, and even with the victory parade too, you would have expected. You mean somebody from NWSL to be on the podium to talk about the league and encouraging fans to watch it. As of right now, it seems to be up to the players to talk about it, or the fans to hold up little signs and banners saying, "Hey, you mean I love NWSL," which doesn't help at this time, at this stage. Really, what you need with NWSL, massive investment. You need. I mean, massive investors to come in to say, "Hey, we're going to make this into something. We're going to pour, millions into this to make this work. We know that there is an appetite for women's soccer," and it's almost like going back to the NASL days, Kartik, where you had a Team USA playing in the old NASL. I'm not sure that would work in these days. In some ways, it would work if you had a Team USA women's team that performed in a league that played against Orlando and Portland and these other teams. But then you're diluting the actual quality and strength of the others. But it's almost like kind of the early stages of American soccer on the men's side is where we're at with the women, except that they're the world champions, but seems to have very little relevance over the club game. It's a mess. All right, let's move on to listener mailbag. First up is Tim Keane. He says, "Just read your article on the new Premier League pass. At first glance, it's really not what I want. But then I thought a little bit more about it, and maybe it is. I'm a Watford supporter, so only really get to see the games against the Big Six on NBCSN. Unfortunately, Watford have a terrible record against the Big Six, so I end up being disappointed and turning off the TV early in frustration. In reality, most of the Watford games are not televised, so I may be better off subscribing to the lesser service, which is the $30 a season, and seeing most of their games. I would not miss the bumper programming, as they always focus on the big teams with hardly a mention of their opponent. The downside is that you have to watch it live with no on-demand, but since I'm on the West Coast, the 7 a.m. hour is normally okay." So some good points there for fans of teams outside of the Big Six, and you might be, if you can get to watch games live at $30 a season, that works. But the challenge is how many of us can actually watch games live these days in our busy lives. John Average Geek says, "The Red Bulls New York NYCFC game advertised a starting kickoff time of 6:30 Eastern time. Now it's past 6:45 and still not kicked off. Can Major League Soccer and its media partners start games at the top or bottom of the hour or on time? European leagues start at the time listed." And this is something, Kartik, I don't know if this is true of other American sports, but this is something that Fox and a lot of it's the U.S. games, U.S. men's national team games, is that they'll list the time. Fox has been guilty of this too, or even with Major League Soccer games. They'll list a time, join us at whatever time it is for the game. The game doesn't start off for another half an hour to an hour later, trying to suck you in to watch the pregame coverage and to boost the TV ratings and give you an opportunity or give you a reason why to watch the pregame. Is this something that happens in other American sports, or is this kind of a MLS-USSF thing, Kartik?
I don't know. I don't know if it happens in other American sports. I assume it does, but it's quite a strange thing. I mean, we've had some. I know when I was at the NASL, we had internal discussions about this, that we were annoyed that there was a team in our league that was doing the same thing. That was starting the television broadcast. They would publish a start time, give it to us at the league. Of course, we were kind of more Eurocentric than MLS tends to be. But our commissioner David Downs was annoyed that they would kick off the match at 7:45 when it was scheduled for 7:30, and we thought maybe 5 to 7 minutes was allowable, right? But not 15 minutes. So there was a big difference in how we thought, okay, fans who watch the Premier League, and that was the guide for us, right? If a published start time is 3 p.m. BST or 10 a.m. Eastern time, the kickoff is at 10 a.m. Eastern time. Okay, maybe based on the U.S. culture, you advertise 7:30 p.m. kickoff, and people are funneling in, and the game kicks off at 7:35 or 7:37, no later than 7:37. But 7:45 is 7:50, which was the case with this one team, we thought was terrible, and we made them change it. Now, I've noticed with U.S. men's national team games, U.S. women's national team matches, and MLS matches on Fox in particular, this is what happens. And actually, there was a game on ESPN recently, a women's national team match, prior in the run-up to the World Cup, that I want to say started at, like, was advertised at 7:30 and started at, like, 7:52 or something like that was kickoff. And we heard a lot of Ian Dark pregame. So if I'm recalling this correctly, so I guess this might be an American sports thing, but I think they take it to an excess with U.S. soccer and MLS. And
To me, it's a bait and switch, and it shows a lack of respect for the viewer, which is, in this case, the soccer fan, trying to suck them into watching the game earlier. And, I mean, if the pregame coverage is good enough, you're going to tune in to watch it early anyway. And this is really misleading. And this is something that's been going on for a long, long time. Andrew Das from the New York Times is probably one of the most well-known people for posting the actual kickoff times of games on Twitter. We'll say, okay, you mean this game is supposed to start at 7:30, the actual kickoff time is 8:15 or whatever it may be. And it's become a running joke because people ask him, like, hey, what is the actual kickoff time? But to me, it's a bait and switch. That's all it is. Paul Jakiewicz says, when it comes to the World Cup final in the Women's World Cup, it was obvious to me that the Netherlands were scared of the U.S. attack and took a very defensive approach and then hoped to score on the counter. Once the U.S. scored on the penalty, the Dutch had no choice but to attack, which opened things up for the U.S. Anthony Bello says, hi guys, as a fan of every sport out there, I don't get the negativity when it comes to VAR. I think a lot of people are panicking by going, let's get rid of this, instead of throwing out the baby with bathwater. Maybe we should take a deep breath and go see if we can find solutions to streamline the process. You could put a time limit on each review. Say if you can't figure it out in a minute, the call stands. Instead of making the ref run over to the monitor on the sideline, you could put an iPad, hand it out to the ref, and give each ref a smartphone where they can view the replay on. Heck, you can do what they do in rugby and let the ref view the replays on the Jumbotron. And if we are worried about the VAR picking the TV angles, why not broadcast to the viewer at home the conversation between the VAR and the referee? VAR in its infancy, when anything is new, people are going to complain, but I think there are sensible solutions for there to improve the flow of play, make it more transparent, and get the calls correct. So something from the last couple of weeks, or even last week, I watched a lot of Wimbledon. I watched the men's final, the women's final. I watched the Cricket World Cup final, and some great sporting occasions, just really exciting stuff. But the thing about tennis and cricket is that VAR has helped improve those two sports. However, before VAR was even a thing in those sports, there was a natural kind of stop-start motion to the way that those games played. They were very slow, methodical. There are breaks. It was easy to add VAR into those situations to fine-tune the accuracy. You mean for those calls where it's so difficult to tell with a human eye whether those balls are in or out, whatever. Soccer is a completely different thing. And while I like goal line technology, I think is the best invention ever in soccer. VAR, in theory, is a good idea with soccer. The more I think about it, the more I want VAR out and leave goal line technology in. and hand it back to the referees to make the calls, because even with VAR, and we've seen this too in the MLS games too, it's complicated in terms of what a clear and obvious error is. We saw too with the New York Derby in Major League Soccer, and a really controversial call about whether it was a throw in or a corner that led to a goal. And so there are rules in place to prevent VAR from being used. Either you use it all the time or you don't use it at all, because otherwise there's always going to be more controversies.
Yeah, so with MLS, Howard Webb has been very conscious of this argument of keeping the match free-flowing and not constantly using VAR. He's in charge of MLS officials and was in charge of the implementation of VAR, and quite honestly had said, I think now it's obviously the Premier League is finally going to implement it, but he had left the UK and come to the US partly because the US is more open to the use of technology. But he still is very reluctant. There were circumstances where even if there is some doubt, it can't be used because he wants the game to move on. I didn't watch the tennis or the cricket, so I can't really speak to this as you can, Chris, but those are sports with lots of natural stoppages. I mean, cricket's a very slow game. Mm-hmm. Tennis is actually a pretty slow game too, relative to football, relative to soccer. So I don't know that those are great examples. Now, the one thing you can take from tennis is Hawkeye, which was quick and instantaneous. Was then applied to goal line technology, pioneered by the Premier League and now in a number of different leagues. So I think that's fine. Now, not having VAR, though, is a drawback in certain leagues. So those of you who may have watched my commentary of the Miami FC Chattanooga game, we had a record number of viewers for one of our streams, but of course it's because Chattanooga's one of the most popular teams outside of MLS, and the game was here in South Florida, so a lot of Chattanooga fans were watching. But we had Chattanooga's goal chalked off after a 2-minute discussion between the center referee and the AR, the lines person. And the center referee, she had initially indicated it was a goal. The linesman or AR's flag, his flag had not gone up. They went and conferred and finally chalked off the goal after a 2-minute conversation without VAR. And what we found out from the center ref after the match was the determination was made because a player interfered with play. Now, this is something that goes back to the VAR at the Women's World Cup. A player interfered with play that was not the goal scorer, but a Chattanooga player who was in an offside position. She had to confer with her AR to make this decision. We had it all wrong on air. I'll admit this. But at the same time, they still got the call right when we went back and looked at the replay after, without VAR. So it can still be done without VAR. However, the thing that was annoying was this was a 2-minute stoppage without VAR. So I guess I'm making the case for VAR and against VAR in the same discussion. The point being, it's a very difficult gray area. These calls can still be made correctly, but sometimes it takes some time, and having VAR is an additional tool. However, I do think the whole offside rule has to be clarified by IFAB and FIFA, because the determination here was the player interfered with play, the Chattanooga player. I agree with that interpretation. However, based on that same interpretation, I believe, and I know I've gone on for this about this for a month, Chris, so I'm sorry, but the Sam Kerr goal or the own goal by Brazil against Australia should not have stood in the Women's World Cup, and the goal which Carly Lloyd interfered with, I think pretty clearly, the Tobin Heath goal, or own goal, I guess it got ruled as US-Sweden, should not have stood either. So I don't understand how they're interpreting passive offsides and interference with play anymore, but in any event, there was a conference here, and they got the call right, in my opinion.
So we know that this upcoming season for the European leagues is going to be, I was going to say a blank storm. You can imagine what the word is, but it's going to be a mess, because you have different leagues adapting VAR technology in different ways. So the rules of VAR being used in the Bundesliga are different than Major League Soccer, which is different than the Premier League, which is going to be starting using VAR this season, which is different than Serie A, which I think Ligue 1 also has it. So that's the thing about soccer, is that in terms of the way that the rules are enforced, they're enforced the same way, so that you watch any game from around the world, it's the same game for the most part, unless it's college or some strange kind of but for the most part, 99% of it is the same. With VAR, for the viewer who's watching leagues and games from around the world, it's different rules applied in different circumstances. So it almost needs to be that, which, God, FIFA needs to step in to say, okay, right, this is how VAR is going to be implemented. Here's how it should be done, which is a whole other mess in itself in terms of, a lot of these leagues have the technology in place, and probably some of the leagues, the Bundesliga probably thinks that they have the best VAR technology, in the way that it works there is probably better than other countries, so that you'd have even infighting to decide which technology and which way it should be implemented. But this upcoming season is going to be a mess, just because that's going to be the talking point. And I'm sure mistakes are going to be made. And that's what I was saying, going back to before, is either you go full in on VAR, or you go completely all the way out and say, okay, forget it, we're just going to use goal line technology.
But Chris, the problem with the Women's World Cup was, and I reiterate this to people who are not thinking about it this way, none of the women who played in leagues with VAR this past season. None of the officials who officiated the World Cup officiated in leagues with VAR this past season. It was completely new to them, and it was sprung on them in the biggest event of their lives. So it's a little different than in the men's game, where it's been tried and tested in these different leagues. I think at the Euros next year, if they go full on VAR, it's not going to bother us as much, because the Bundesliga has now had it. This will be the fourth season the Bundesliga has had it. The Eredivisie has had it for 4 or 5 years. Serie A for like 3 seasons, and this will be the first year in the Premier League. But everybody would have dealt with it. All the officials would have dealt with it. So that's a big part of the blowback on the Women's World Cup. It isn't just, hey, we're all cavemen and we don't believe in technology. It's not that at all. There were some other factors into why in this tournament, it was the wrong tournament to do it full on. That having been said, Chris, you made a very good point a couple of weeks ago that it was U.S. soccer media complaining that it was inequitable, or it was a double standard that they used in the men's game and not in the women's game. Not even thinking about our country, that MLS was one of the pioneers in VAR in this world, in world football, since Howard Webb came over in 2015 or 2016, I think he came over, versus the women's game, where we've never had VAR implemented in our domestic league.
Yeah, and also with the Premier League, they're starting up the season too with VAR, is that I'm sure that they're going through rigorous training, but even a lot of those referees too have never been using VAR before. Some of the better ones perhaps have been playing in refereeing some major tournaments, but for the most part, the majority of those referees are going to be going in cold on this one too. Despite some of the training.
And you saw they already reacted to the Women's World Cup, because the use of the issuing of yellow cards to keepers coming off their line, the Premier League already said, we're not going to do that. So, and that was a reaction directly to Scotland's elimination in that group stage match against Argentina, because there was a national outcry. I mean, I listened to 606 that night from the BBC for 5 Live, and the intention had been to talk about the football, and it was an hour of VAR calls. Now, I understand that's the UK, and that might be their attitude towards technology versus the rest of the world or the US. But still, to me, that was pretty telling, because England had advanced. They'd beaten Japan, who had been to the previous two Women's World Cup finals that very same night. But Scotland's elimination was even on the minds of English callers, because of it was inflicted by VAR in their minds.
So last up in the comments, the listener mailbag is Herb, and it's a long message, so I won't read the whole thing, but he says, I know that you're very busy, but I was wondering if you heard about the updated CONCACAF World Cup qualifying format. The hex is going to automatically grant the top 6 teams according to the FIFA rankings, and there'll be a mini tournament among the rest. The top 3 in the hex qualify for the World Cup, while the 4th-placed hex team will play the mini-tournament winner, and the winner of that series will play in inter-playoffs with a CONMEBOL team, most likely. When looking at this update, I was quite upset. I honestly think that this format was built solely to make sure that Mexico and the U.S. don't struggle in World Cup qualifiers like they did in 2014 and 2018. Furthermore, as a Canadian soccer fan, I can't help but think this new format will only harm teams like Canada, Haiti, and Jamaica. So, Kartik, this definitely has an impact on the TV viewing experience. As of last year, I mean, I think both you and I mentioned a couple of times that we had very big fears and doubts whether or not the U.S. may qualify for the 2022 World Cup based on the quality and strength of this team and how good some of these other teams are in a CONCACAF region, especially a lot of these players playing in Major League Soccer and improving. There was no guarantee that this would happen. Does this make it a guarantee that the U.S. will make the 2022 World Cup?
Certainly makes it much easier for them. I completely agree with Herb. I think this is an absolutely ridiculous format that a lot of people in the last week and a half have believed they will have to change. Now, they don't have much time to change it, but it's hugely unfair on the nations outside the top six. Herb, you mentioned 2014 and 2018, Mexico almost not qualifying, and then the U.S. not qualifying. I'll even go back to 2010 at the sub-group stage, the sub-hex stage, where Mexico got through on goal difference over Jamaica, and they end up qualifying, for, obviously. No one even remembers that in the sub-hex stage, the previous round, Canada was actually in that group and finished last, but Honduras won the group. Mexico and Jamaica finished level on points, and Mexico went through on goal difference. And if I remember correctly, there was a hurricane that went through Jamaica during that sub-qualifying, which affected when they played their home qualifiers. Quite frankly, and then the U.S. actually struggled in the sub-qualifier for 2018 before they were knocked out in the hex. They were they needed to beat Trinidad and Tobago in the final match in Jacksonville to get through. So CONCACAF is eliminating the possibility, even though the U.S. and Mexico have not been eliminated at that stage. They have been close to being eliminated at that stage. As I said, Mexico got through on goal difference once. Everyone forgets it because then they made the World Cup easily, and then they got to the round of 16 like they always do in the World Cup in 2010. This is a complete sham. I cannot stress enough, and I'm not the only one out there that really is disappointed by this. It's unfair on hugely unfair on Canada. It's hugely unfair on Haiti. It's hugely unfair on Curacao. Those three nations in particular, who I think with the way that those three have played in the last year and a half, are emerging as potential countries that could get into the hex and play through the qualifying, get into the hex, and potentially grab third or fourth in the hex. Now, as far as Jamaica is concerned, as of now, and again, I don't know how these FIFA World Rankings are going to shake out in a year. As of now, they'd still be in that top six. They are in the top six, I should say. So they might be okay, but I think the three countries really screwed, I have to use that term, by this ridiculous qualifying formula, which I don't think any other confederation would try, by the way. It's so audacious, is Canada, Curacao, and Haiti. And additionally, Chris, you have to think about the commercial side of this. CONCACAF, they were the epicenter of the FIFA scandal. We've been told everything has been cleaned up, right? Mm-hmm. In CONCACAF. But yet they continue to make these sorts of strange decisions like this. This is crazy. I mean, if you're looking at this on the surface, you have to believe there's some nefarious motive for this. And they continue to have this relationship with Soccer United Marketing and holding every Gold Cup knockout stage competition in the United States from at least the knockout stages on. They had some group stage matches outside the U.S. this time. And they've just approved a tournament, the League's Cup, which I am looking forward to. I'm going to watch. We talked about the TV on that last week, Chris. Mm-hmm. A tournament that is not going to include the other countries of the Confederation outside the U.S., Canada, and Mexico. I mean, it's crazy. Can you imagine if UEFA approved the Anglo-Deutsch Cup? Right? You know?
Right.
Hey, let's have an 18 tournament of Bundesliga and Premier League clubs. Forget you in Serie A. Forget you in the Eredivisie, et cetera. I mean, it would never get approved.
It makes you wonder what happened in some of these, I'm sure, behind-closed-door meetings between CONCACAF and USSF in terms of the discussions that were had. I mean, we know that as of, 6 months ago, Carlos Cordero was talking about perhaps the U.S. maybe not participating in future Gold Cups, whether there would be a future Gold Cup. And that was pretty quickly kind of shot down by CONCACAF. So it makes you wonder. I mean, CONCACAF obviously is giving Mexico and the United States a huge bone here, but what is the USSF and the FMF giving in return? I mean, it just really bizarre in terms of the way that this has come out here, and that's the thing too. I guess at the end of the day, I mean, it benefits the U.S. men. Well, does it really benefit the U.S. men's national team? Because it helps improve their chances of qualifying for a World Cup. But does that help them in terms of, you mean, playing against stronger opposition? I mean, just playing within the region.
One of the complaints I've heard is from U.S. fans saying we won't have competitive matches, really competitive matches. The Nations League is not that in a lot of people's minds. Now, it could change. It could be like Europe where suddenly we took the Nations League very seriously. But if we don't, then there is a fear that the U.S. is not going to get competitive matches except in Gold Cup competitions until the hex. And here's the other piece here. Cordero, in saying the U.S. may not participate in future Gold Cups, also talked about having this joint Copa America tournament, which CONMEBOL said no thank you to. Yep. So essentially, the U.S. and Mexico are in this position where they're not going to get competitive matches. Sure, they'll be able to have more cash grab friendlies, but they're just not going to get the level of match or the level of tournament that they need going into a World Cup, especially now that qualifying has been made, at least in theory, significantly easier. And not just in theory, but it is significantly fewer pressure competitive matches now than you would otherwise.
Well, the other thing, too, about this in terms of the FIFA rankings is that, and I can't think of the example right this second, but I know that in the past, countries have looked at ways of, you mean, juicing up their rankings, is playing games against certain types of levels of teams to help improve their rankings.
Wales is the classic example of this, Chris. Sorry to cut you off, but okay. Wales is the classic example of this.
In what way, though? Like, how would they juice?
So Wales very strategically, in the cycle leading into the 2016 Euros and 2018 World Cup, very strategically scheduled friendlies or no friendlies on open dates in order to boost their FIFA ranking. It's well known, and it was smart got them in a higher pot for both qualifying and for when they did qualify for the Euro 2016 tournament, a higher pot in that tournament. Although they ended up in a group with England, which wasn't that easy, right? But they ended up winning the group anyway. But they strategically gamed the system, the Welsh FA, very very smart, and I think they're. Countries in CONCACAF that will now be looking at the Welsh example and saying, okay, although it's a little easier in Europe, right? Because their competitive matches would be really competitive and would boost their rankings. And what Wales did is they didn't want to play friendlies that were going to drop their FIFA World ranking that was attained through qualifying. So what they did is they would just not play friendlies. In fact, going into one of the tournaments, right, wasn't the Euro 2016, Wales played one friendly also instead of playing the kind of traditional two or three because this was part of the consideration. Point being, now I think CONCACAF countries will be going looking at those sorts of examples and gaming the system, and someone will game it well enough to get into that top six and not have to and be in the hex. Yeah. That's my prediction. Yeah.
And for countries like Wales or other countries, I mean, you could have behind closed door games against. I mean, you could have training camps and say, okay, we're just going to focus.
That's
on
what they did, Wales. Right. Yeah, that's how they did it, and that was smart, and they were fine in the tournament, right? But they had essentially cut out the friendlies, played. Now I'm remembering exactly what it was. Wales did not. They played nothing but competitive matches, except for one or two friendlies. So the friendlies have some sort of point quotient that weaken your total, right? Mm-hmm. The formula might have changed since then, but the point is that they gamed the system and they were still able to get. They still got to the semifinals of that tournament because they played those closed door friendlies, or they played a friendly against a club team, mm-hmm. and that doesn't count, right? You know, things that still kept them sharp and together as a team.
Interesting. Well, there you go, Kartik. I always learned something from this podcast. I learned something from you, so I didn't realize that. And yeah, and it's relevant to the U.S. men's national team and the Mexican national team, as well as the other teams from the CONCACAF region. So thank you, Herb, for that question. Definitely some good thoughts there. So if you have any good thoughts or you have any questions or feedback for us have questions about streaming or cord cutting or watching games on television, you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can always post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. And if you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. We would greatly appreciate that. And Kartik, heading into another weekend, we've got everything from the Premier League Asia Trophy Final that's going to be on NBCSports.com, as well as the Africa Cup of Nations Final, Major League Soccer games, and much, much more, including NPSL games too. What should they do?
Enjoy your football.